Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, let's go around the NFL playoffs. Six wild card weekend games. It starts tomorrow with the Chargers and the Texans. That, by the way, was an obvious first game. It's probably the least attractive of all of the matchups, and they tend to put the least attractive matchup in that 4:30 Saturday slot, Denton. That's on CBS. The Chargers are 3-point favorites. The total is 42.5, so let's start with that one. What do we think? I'll let you go first.
Well, you know I like the Chargers a lot. You know, I came across a stat. Justin Herbert has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in not putting the ball in harm's way. Right. So seeing him go up against this Texans defense, you know, Houston had so many high expectations entering this season and have really not lived up to a majority of them. Not all the faults of CJ Stroud, injuries, defense not being as good, offensive line taking a massive step back. All legitimate reasons as to why they have not been the Super Bowl contender that most people thought they would be. I like the Chargers because I think the Chargers have an identity. They run the football and their quarterback doesn't turn the football over. They're not asking Justin Herbert to be Superman. He can. We've seen the ability that he can go out there and throw the ball, you know, 500 yards on any given week, but they're not asking him to do that. So I like the Chargers. Plus, Jim Harbaugh's a winner. He's going to find a way.
I like the Texans. I mean, part of it, as you know, is this is the biggest sort of contrarian anti, you know, public sentiment game of the six. No one is giving Houston a shot. The Chargers are 3-point favorites on the road. I get a team at home. I get a team that's good defensively. You know, they got Derek Stingley Jr. They've got Lassiter. They've got, you know, Danielle Hunter, you know, and Will Anderson Jr. I think that they can get after Herbert. I think defensively they can cause some issues. I see this being a low-scoring game that the Texans have a chance to win. They are going to be in my smell test, I promise you that, plus the three. And if I like them plus the three, I got to give them a chance to win the game. Look, Stroud, Nico Collins, etc. They're capable. They just haven't been consistent because of what's going on up front. They've been a mess up front offensively. And the Chargers can really get after you defensively. I think this is one of those, you know, conservative, you know, fast moving games, good defensive action for both teams. And it ends up, you know, being 17-13, 17-14, one way or the other. I'm giving Houston a shot in this spot at home. I think we've seen a lot of times this, you know, kind of early game home team 4-5 matchup with the five being given a lot of opportunity. Remember last year, wasn't Houston-Cleveland the 4-5 matchup, and Cleveland was rolling coming in. Houston had played very well too, but, you know, inexperienced quarterback, rookie quarterback, and Houston rolled the Browns. I get it. Herbert's more, you know, experienced. You've got a very experienced head coach in the postseason. I kind of like Houston to pull this out or just at least make it a down-to-the-wire game where they at least get the cover. I was reading something earlier. Houston's been outstanding on third down against quarterbacks. 19.5 QBR is the quarterback, the QBR on third downs against Houston's defense. They've been outstanding. Stingley Jr.'s turned into, I mean, is he the best corner in the game? He's close to it. Is Surtain the best corner in the game?
I'm saying Surtain is
I think so. I would take Surtain. I agree with you, but Stingley Jr. has been outstanding. I kind of like Houston. All right, Saturday night.
Saturday night, we get another divisional matchup. Steelers-Ravens, not quite the Steelers-Ravens feel as we got in the mid-2010s and kind of late aughts when it was Flacco and Roethlisberger. You get Russell Wilson, and then you get Lamar. We love Lamar. Baltimore 9.5-point favorites. It's the biggest line of the weekend. They're going to be without Zay Flowers, but Pittsburgh has been, I mean, crawling might even be too generous to describe how they are getting to the finish line of the season. They've been on a big-time losing streak.
Pittsburgh's chance, first of all, losing Zay Flowers is a big deal for Saturday night. He's been outstanding. I think Pittsburgh can't think about, you know, slobber knocker, trenches, running the football kind of, you know, Pittsburgh-Baltimore kind of a game. They can't move the football running the football here recently. I actually like Jaylen Warren in some ways more than I like Najee Harris. You know, when they had a chance, I know it's Cincinnati's defense, but is when they went quick game and they went no huddle, I think their best chance with Russ and, by the way, you know, their receivers, Pickens has to hold on to the ball. He dropped three passes against Cincinnati. But I think they got to throw the football. I don't have any confidence, and it sounds like you don't either, in Pittsburgh's ability to move the football and score. And I do give them a shot defensively. Look, this is Lamar's postseason. If he doesn't play well, if he's antsy, as he described earlier this week about his previous playoff games, anything can happen in any of these games. And look, when you get a rivalry like this and it's the third time they've met, you know, it's hard to say that Pittsburgh doesn't have any chance, but what I saw offensively from them last week, it was a miracle cover for me. I just can't imagine that they can score even 17 points in the game. I don't see Baltimore scoring any less than 21 or 24. So I like Baltimore. I don't like the game from a betting perspective, personally, but I think Baltimore wins this game and advances. And the number one reason is there's no reason to feel like Pittsburgh can move the football and score enough points on offense.
Yeah, I'm in agreeance with you. I would emphasize what you mentioned about a quick game for Pittsburgh. Anything that's more than a three-step drop for Russell Wilson becomes
trouble.
Like an 86-step drop. He just holds the ball forever, and he's going to get sacked by this Baltimore Ravens defense. They understand that, too, knowing that they played him three times. I do think Baltimore wins that 9.5 number. You know how I feel, and you feel this way too. Anytime you're close to double digits in the NFL, that's kind of like a danger zone. Stay away from that, especially in the postseason. A 9.5, nearly 10-point number in the postseason is incredibly too high to jump on.
I mean, let me just mention, because when you talked about Russell in pure dropback, it's not pretty. One of the things Russell Wilson has to recognize that even at, 35 years old, he doesn't have the wheels that he used to have, but his wheels are better than most still. He's got to run more. He has to scramble more. He seems, you know, it felt this way in Denver, last year and the year before. It felt this way at times in Baltimore this year, where he kind of views himself as, you know, I'm a veteran quarterback. I'm a guy that beats you with my brain. I'm a guy that beats you with, you know, in the pocket. No. The best of Russell Wilson in his career was Russell Wilson on the move, extending, creating, and threatening a defense with his legs. He's not the runner he was 10 years ago, obviously, but we've seen a couple of runs in recent games that have been big. He can't hesitate. Whatever it takes to move the chains, because they have had a big problem staying on the field offensively. I think that's big. On Saturday night. All right, let's go to Sunday. We both like Baltimore.
Baltimore. Onward to Sunday, the second biggest line of the weekend. You get Denver on the road in Buffalo. I can't imagine what the weather is like in Buffalo.
It's not going to. I was looking at it. It's not terrible. I think they've got snow Saturday night. But let me pull up the quick updated forecast for Buffalo. But I don't think we have snow on game day. Cold. But no snow, you know, upper 20s at kickoff with no snow in the forecast. So that's what you got as of now.
It still seems like it sucks, but I like it where it's warm. They're 8.5-point favorites over Denver. Bo Nix's first opportunity in the playoffs. He's in the same spot as Jaden Daniels. I did come across a crazy stat. Let me just pull this up. I mean, you want to talk about somebody sent this to me because I had talked about the LeBron stats, right? Like Jaden Daniels has been coming up with LeBron stats, if you will. Our guy Fred sent me this on Twitter. Sean Payton is 30-12 against bald head coaches. And Sean McDermott is bald. Okay. So the Bills might be in trouble.
Who in the AFC, who in the NFC South was a bald coach that he beat the snot? Dan Quinn?
Unfortunately, Dan Quinn. I think he, you know, he coached up against Lovie Smith for a while when he was with Tampa Bay. He was without hair on top of his head. Great beard, but didn't have hair.
Do you have any more serious analysis?
No, I do not. First of all, I do think that's serious. But, I mean, you're going up against Josh Allen, who is on the midst of this MVP-caliber season. Bo Nix has had a very good season, but I do think there's a massive difference in quarterbacks. But Denver's defense with Patrick Surtain, if Amari Cooper is going to be playing as wide receiver one in 2025, Patrick Surtain can lock his ass up. So what is Buffalo going to do offensively if that is the case?
This is a very interesting game because I think Denver can move the football and score against Buffalo. And, you know, you came across a very interesting and relevant stat. So did I. Bo Nix has a 93.8 QBR on throws of 15 or more yards. Jared Goff destroyed Buffalo on throws of 15 yards or more. By the way, that's a shocking number on Bo Nix, isn't it? For a guy that we were all convinced after watching him at Oregon would be a horizontal behind the line of scrimmage thrower of the football. He's been excellent as a rookie. Not offensive rookie of the year excellent, but he's been excellent. I think Denver is creative offensively. They've got a quarterback that really has gained a significant amount of confidence. They've got guys like Sutton. They've got guys in the backfield. The guy that, you know, may be a major X factor in this game is Mims. Marvin Mims Jr. has been a big game, a big play kind of a guy. I give Denver a legit shot to win this game. They're an 8.5-point underdog. This isn't, first of all, I didn't even mention the strength of their football team, which is their defense. But Buffalo has seemed to move the ball against anybody that's good on defense. But I think Denver can move the ball and score points. This is going to be one of those games where the road environment and Bo Nix in his first game and basically a lot of the Broncos in their first kind of playoff game, do they tighten up a little bit? Do they make mistakes? They can't afford to make any mistakes. If they go through this game and let's just say they're plus one or better in the big mistake category, turnover category, I give them a chance to win the game outright. I definitely give them a chance to cover the number. I think this is a close game Sunday in Buffalo. I'll give Buffalo, because they're at home, the edge, but I think it's, you know, something like 27-24, 30-24, something like that.
Yeah, this might be something where you flirt with covering Denver there, because I don't know that Buffalo's going to win by nine. How about the game where the line has moved at least a little bit? I'm still seeing it at 4.5 at some books, Kevin, but
I see
it has
five.
Gone up to 5. We thought it was because Jordan Love might be dealing with some stuff. I am now seeing that it is official. Jalen Hurts is clear concussion protocol, so he is going to be good to go. There was, I guess, some questions on whether or not he would be active this weekend. You get Philly, you get Green Bay. This is the game that precedes our game with Washington and Tampa, so that's a 4:30 kick on Sunday. The Eagles are now either 4.5 or 5-point favorites wherever you can find them. This is also a rematch from week one, so we get two first-week rematches in the postseason. Had Minnesota beaten Detroit, it would have been all three. Week one rematches.
Oh, because
Detroit,
Washington, Tampa, and Philly, Green Bay in the Brazil game.
Yep, and then it would have been Detroit and Los Angeles if the Vikings won, and they were the week one matchup as well. But you get Green Bay, you get Philadelphia, not in Brazil this time. It's going to be in Philadelphia. You decide which is a better place to play. I think I lean the Eagles in this one, Kevin. I'm actually stunned in a way that Washington has been the popular pick amongst talking heads in that one. I thought Green Bay would be similar, but I'm going to lean Philadelphia.
I think Green Bay has been similar. I think a lot of people like the 6-7 seeds in the NFC playoffs and the matchups. I'm with you. If Jalen is healthy and cleared to go, obviously a big topic is Jordan Love and how healthy he will be. But Philly's one of those teams where if you can stop the run with four up front and you can rush the passer with four up front in the postseason, man, God, does that go a long way. Philly is so good on defense, and they are so well coached defensively. And last year in the postseason, remember, Green Bay ran it at will against Dan Quinn's defense in Dallas. They threw it at will. It was really awful. But that was a smaller defensive team. That was a smaller kind of try to make plays, but it had struggled to stop the run. Philly doesn't struggle to stop anything defensively. I think that's where this game's won, in the trenches with Philly's front four and the ability to stop teams from running the football without loading the box, to stop teams from throwing the football without having to send extra man pressures. Philly can do that. They're one of the only teams in the draw that can do that. And I'm going to take that, especially in that environment. The Dallas environment last year, there were so many Packer fans in Dallas. This is at Philly. If Hurts is healthy, I like the Eagles. And I think the Eagles end up covering in this game as well. You know, it ends up being something like a 21-13, 24-13 kind of a game. I like Philly.
Yeah, I like Philly too. They're my pick to come out of the NFC. So we're going to skip our game. We'll get to that as we close our show. Final one, Vikings, Rams. This one's going to be in Arizona. The NFL made the decision yesterday to move it from Los Angeles due to the fires taking place on the West Coast and moving it to Arizona where the Cardinals play. And the line is adjusted, Kevin. This was a 1.5-point line for the entirety of the week almost. I'm now seeing Minnesota -2.5. So the Vikings line getting a little larger.
That's in part because they're going to have home field advantage in Glendale.
They're going to have home field advantage in L.A. too.
Yeah, but not to the same extent. You know, I said this earlier in the show, a lot of Midwesterners end up in Arizona for the winter. You're going to have, the tickets are on sale. You're going to have a Viking takeover. It's unfortunate, and obviously it's tragic for all of the reasons that we've, all witnessed all week long. But that is going to be a home game for Minnesota. I think the key to this game is the Rams versus Brian Flores' blitz. And on the other side, Sam Darnold versus LA's pressure, period. I mean, LA beat Minnesota. It was a Thursday night game. It was Minnesota coming off their first loss to Detroit, and then they lost 30-20. Remember, there was that just egregious face mask on Darnold end zone missed at the end of the game. It doesn't mean Minnesota would have come down and won the game, but I think Stafford and Nacua and Kupp and McVay are very good with what they will counter Brian Flores' blitz rate and pressure with, because he comes after. I think Minnesota blitzed more than anybody in the league did. They took some big hits against the blitz against Detroit, and there's a lot of similarities between Detroit and L.A. I kind of like the Rams here. I think the Rams are I trust Stafford and I trust McVay and their receivers to be able to beat the blitz and get it done against Minnesota's defense. And then we saw what Sam Darnold is under a lot of pressure in a big spot. It was a disaster last week. I think the Rams win this game. I see where the line's going, and it'll feel like a road game in Glendale. But I like the Rams Monday night.
We're on opposite sides. I like Minnesota in this one. The Rams struggle against the passing attack. I think Justin Jefferson has a defining game in this one. We haven't gotten to see him a ton in the postseason just because Minnesota hasn't been in the position that they are this year. Defensively, they've always struggled, even when Kirk was the quarterback. Now that they have one, it's lifted them to this spot. I think Justin Jefferson has a really crazy game. But I think this is the game. The reason this line is as short as it is, Kevin, I think this comes down to a final drive in some capacity or another, whether that be an overtime.
Who would you trust, Stafford or Darnold, on a final drive?
I think Minnesota will have the opportunity on the final drive. So I'm going to go with that's why I'm leaning with them. Not necessarily a trust thing. I trust Stafford over Darnold, but I think Minnesota touches the ball last in the matchup, and I think they win this one.
That's kind of random to just predict that they'll touch the ball last.
It is.
To predict that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's with a 2.5-point line. Vegas is almost doing the same thing.
Right. So it's 50-50 on who will actually touch the ball last and needing to score. One of the things I'm just curious about with all of what's happened and is still happening in Southern California, how has that impacted the Rams' preparation for this game? Has anybody written anything about that? Do we know?
I don't know. That's a great question. I was wondering that, too, because we've heard a lot about how it's impacted NBA players and NBA coaches.
J.J. Redick lost his home. I would imagine some of the Rams live in some of the, you know, areas affected. I don't know that for sure, but, yeah, I mean, can you imagine being out there and it's like, yeah, we got practice at 1 o'clock. Yeah, but my neighborhood's burning down. I don't know the answer to that. We'll find out. But if they've struggled to kind of prepare for this, look, one of the benefits is that they are coming in fresh after not playing their starters on Sunday against Seattle, whereas Minnesota was dragged through a very difficult night in the final game of the year. So we'll see. All right. Smell test coming up. Denton's got some news, and the reason we're going to do news today is the All-Pro teams just got announced, and there are 4 Washington players on it. 4. We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan showed the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, 4-2 last weekend, 3-1 on the NFL games on Sunday. This from Steve. Public has crushed it in the NFL this year. How did you do it again? Thank you, Steve. That's a compliment. It's a good question, too. I'd have to do more research on it. My college record, which, you know, most people complain about typically early in the season, did really well, I know, on college games in kind of the second half of the season. But I think I just got the right NFL games more often than not. It is true, the public really over the last month of the NFL season really crushed a lot of sports books. And for whatever reason, I avoided those, you know, sides that more often than not I probably would have had, but for reasons typically because I knew that there was certain bettors and certain sharp bettors on the other side probably steered clear of them. All right, I got 3 plays this weekend, one of them involving our game Sunday night, but we'll start with tonight. Look, there isn't anybody that hasn't said that's followed this college football playoff after Ohio State destroyed Tennessee and destroyed Oregon that hasn't said just basically stencil in Ohio State's name on the trophy, the Dr. Pepper trophy for the national championship. A week from Monday night, Ohio State's the best team. They're the best team by miles, and they're going to win the national championship easily. The public is lined up on Ohio State. I mean, if you had 2 lines in a sports book, one to bet on Ohio State and one to bet on Texas, there would be nobody in the Texas line. And the Ohio State line, you'd have to get into early in the morning or you wouldn't be able to get the bet in. I'd be the guy in the Texas line. I'm taking Texas plus the 6. I actually kind of like them on the money line too, but the wager, the smell test pick, is major against the public. Ohio State laying 6. I'll take Texas getting the points plus the 6. In terms of thinking about this game, Denton, I really think it's the Michigan model where they stop the run. Ohio State doesn't run it enough, which they didn't do against Michigan. And somehow they get Will Howard off the mark and they rattle him. Texas has arguably the best front 4 in the game. I'm not taking a quarterback that I feel good about in Quinn Ewers. That's part of the problem. And Ohio State's defense has been awesome as well. I think there's a little bit of the Michigan game here for Texas to keep it close, and I think if they end up covering it's or winning outright, it's 13-10, or it's 17-13, something like that. But I love Ohio State as a team, too. I think Jeremiah Smith is the best receiver we've seen in college football in a while. I love the way Ryan Day calls it, and I would expect that they're going to get the ball out quickly into the receiver's hands and make Texas tackle in space. I don't see it from I don't feel confident that Texas can do it if I were just picking the winner of the game without being a better, but this is one of those that just fits the philosophy. The world is on Ohio State. There is some sharp Texas money line money that has come in over the last 2 days. Hasn't really impacted the point spread because it's been money line money. I like Texas plus six. We'll kick it off that way. We go to tomorrow, where the biggest public play of the six wildcard weekend games, the LA Chargers, laying three, a perceived very short number against Houston. Look, people are wondering why Ohio State's favored by less than a touchdown with the way they looked against Oregon and Tennessee. And people are wondering why LA's only a three-point favorite against a team that has not been very good in Houston. I'll take the Texans plus the three at home. They can do it defensively. Houston can. And then the last play in the smell test for the weekend is our game, Sunday night. There is more action on Washington than Tampa Bay, but it's not overwhelming action. Where there is overwhelming action is on the over. That line is at 50.5. I'm going to play the under here. I've been talking all week. This has got 30-27, 31-28, 34-31 written all over it. But it's not the way I wager. Every sports book in America will need that game to come in under the total of 50.5. And if you're going to stick with me on this, which you should based on my track record, you should play it sooner rather than later. Why do I say that? I have a feeling there will be a lot of sharp money on the under as well in this one, and that'll bring the number down. Under Tampa Bay, Washington, 50.5. Those are the three plays. Texas tonight plus six. The Texans tomorrow plus the three. And Washington, Tampa under 50.5 on Sunday night. There were a couple of other things I kind of liked, Denton. I kind of liked the under in the game tonight, too, between Texas and Ohio State. Kind of liked the under in the Chargers-Texans games. I like a lot of the unders. You know, I've said this before. The public loves favorites and overs, typically, in standalone games. So if you love a favorite or you love an over in a standalone, nationally televised, no other game going on, you're typically not on the smart side. But there is some smart over action in a couple of these games. But there you go. Texas plus six tonight, Houston plus three tomorrow, and the Washington-Tampa under 50.5. On Sunday night. Let's get some Denton news in the all-pro teams, which have been announced. All right, so
We've got some all-pros.
You told me this in a break, and I'm like, four? Well, I'm like, Terry is definite, and then I'm like, and I guessed Luvu, right? I guessed three of them. I did not guess the fourth.
You guessed three of them, so there's three that you got. These are all second team guys. Washington.
Nobody made the first team.
Nobody on the first team, but they got four on the second team. Terry, and then both linebackers, Luvu and Wagner.
That Luvu's on that second team.
Luvu should be. The Wagner one might be a little more surprising. I didn't see a lot of predictions with him on it, but he made it. And then the fourth one was special teams related. It wasn't.
This is shocking. And I guessed when you told me it was special teams, I said, oh, Nick Ballor, he made it. Or Reeves made it. Or maybe, you know, tell everybody who made the team as the starting kick returner on the all-pro second team.
It is Austin Eckler.
Kevontae Turpin was the first team returner, I'm assuming.
Kevontae Turpin was first team kick returner. Marvin Mims was punt returner.
Look, Austin Eckler, I think, was second or third in the league in kickoff returns when he got hurt. He was what was he averaging, 34, 35 kickoff return?
Yeah, something very, very impressive. He did have a touchdown that was called back.
Called back against the Giants.
Penalty, which is kind of a nonsense penalty, away from the play. He shouldn't have been called. But he had Austin Eckler had a great year returning-wise. His official numbers, 19 returns for 594 yards.
How many returns did he have relative to, say, Turpin or other top guys?
Let me see if I can pull up the full stats across the NFL. I mean, Turpin obviously had at least one touchdown, unfortunately.
We did not see, by the way, this year with the new kickoff return rule, we did not see like this increase in huge returns and touchdown returns.
But here's why. I mean, Austin Ekeler is third in kick return yardage.
Yeah. What was the number? 34?
Play. He averaged 31.3 yards per return. Kevontae Turpin averaged 33.5. He had nearly 1,000 yards of returnage yards on 27 attempts. And one touchdown.
What was Eckler's total number of kickoff returns?
19.
Who was close to that with an average? Because he missed, you know, six games or whatever he missed.
So the averages are as follow.
How about the guy in Cincinnati that had a kickoff return early, the Purdue guy?
Charlie Jones. He only returned five.
Okay.
He had five for 200, but the one of them was 100 yards.
How about the former Skin? And Charger, you know, who was a receiver and a returner here who was really good.
DeAndre Carter was more DeAndre Carter. Return guys. Laviska Shenault was the Chargers' best kick return guy.
What about Carter? Where does he play? Chicago? Detroit? Chicago?
Los Angeles, I thought. Is he not there anymore?
No, he got moved. He had a couple of big returns this year. I remember seeing on the highlights.
He's in Chicago. He had... he was much more of a punt return guy, but he did have 479 yards, a 67-yarder on the kick return guy, but he's much more of a punt guy.
What was his average on kickoff returns?
31.9.
Oof.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that averaged close to what Ekeler did. I think for him specifically, was the yardage of 594.
Well, that's awesome. He was headed towards that. If he had played in all those games, he was certainly headed towards a Pro Bowl kickoff returner opportunity and certainly an All-Pro. And they recognized him for what he was when he was healthy. He was an excellent kickoff returner. By the way, he didn't do it Sunday against Dallas. And Luke McCaffrey's proven to be a pretty decent kickoff returner as well. Washington's special teams overall this year, minus some of the field goal and PAT kicking issues, were pretty outstanding coverage-wise and then Tressway. As well. But Terry, okay, I've got the list now. So the starting receivers, it had to be Chase and Jefferson.
Jefferson were the only two players that were unanimous first team selections.
So here it is. So you had mentioned this when we started to talk about this. Three receivers on each of the first two teams. So Amon-Ra St. Brown was the third receiver.
Yes.
Remember, we thought there was a chance he would make it over Terry on the first team All-Pro. We also thought there was a chance that CeeDee Lamb might make it or A.J. Brown might make it in front of Terry on the first team. But Amon-Ra St. Brown was the third after Chase and Jefferson on the first team. The second team receivers... Terry, CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown.
NFC East, stand up.
Is that listed, by the way, in vote total, or it's not alphabetical?
It's not alphabetical. My assumption is that Terry was the first second-team selection,
okay,
by the way this is laid out, that I'm seeing it. Are you looking at that Ari Mirov guy, his Twitter account?
No, I'm looking at the ESPN.com story.
Oh, then I mean, my guess would be that it is listed top to 1, 2, and 3 for receivers.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who I wonder if Cosme got even close.
It is worth noting, Josh Allen is second team, All-Pro, Lamar is first. That should lean in the direction of Lamar winning MVP.
Oh, right. Yeah. Definitely.
Because these are, I don't know if it's the exact same people that vote All Pro and MVP, but
it's got to be a big
overlap.
Crossover.
Yeah, the Venn diagram, the middle of that Venn diagram is pretty big.
Can we still get Lamar at pretty good odds?
You can get Lamar at some books at plus 320. So I would run over there now if you have the opportunity to maybe throw some money down on Lamar's MVP. I'm in D.C., so I can bet MVP. I might have to throw some on
that. Most excited that Frankie Louvu was recognized for the player that he was. Because, remember, he was a second-team alternate on the Pro Bowl voting.
Right.
Louvu is the first linebacker. How do they do that? They have edge rushers and linebackers. So basically interior linebackers. He's the first linebacker listed on the second team. If it is by votes, he just missed the first team, which was Zach Bond. He was outstanding with Philadelphia. Fred Warner, Roquan Smith. And then Luvu, Wagner, and Zaire Franklin in Indy. Okay. All right. There you go. Four first-team All-Pros. Not bad. Not bad at all. We'll finish up with, let's see if we've got time. If you want to get on the phone lines real quickly, just how will Jaden fare in his first win-or-go-home career game? Give me some quick numbers. Denton and I will do the same. We'll have our final score predictions on Sunday night's game as well. All right, our predictions coming up here in a moment. We're not going to have time to take calls. Sorry, we bad clock management on my part. Give me a D grade on clock management today. So this is Jaden's first, you know, opportunity in a game, in a playoff game. You can have these similar, you know, games end of season, you know, have to win or you go home. That game, you know, wasn't necessarily the Atlanta game. It kind of felt like it in the moment. He was great in the game, but he's checked every single box this year. You know, whatever number of boxes you had, he's checked them all. This would be the one box we didn't anticipate him having an opportunity to check before the season started, unless you were crazy like I was before the season started, and that is his first playoff game. How will he fare? I think he'll fare very well. I think part of it is that he has to, and they're not facing a real, you know, imposing defensive football team. Should be a fast track, nice weather in Tampa on Sunday night. He's already shown with kind of the lights the brightest his ability to play big. I like him to have a big game. I think a lot of quick throws early. I think he's going to throw a bunch, and I think he's going to have a high completion percentage. We've seen some of those games this year where he's had, you know, a very high completion percentage. It really started for him in terms of the completion percentage that night in Cincinnati. Remember when he went 21 of 23 against the Bengals in that game? He had a 26 for 30 game against Arizona. He had a 25 of 30 game against Tennessee. He was 25 of 31 against New Orleans. I think this is a high completion percentage game against primarily zone coverage on Sunday night. I think he's something like 26 of 31 for like 262 yards, a couple of touchdowns, no picks. I think he's outstanding in the game. I don't think this is a game in which he ends up with 16 carries for 88 yards, because I think he'll be able to throw the football. It'll be quick, but I think he'll be able to throw the football. But he'll end up with something like 8 rushes for, you know, 48 yards, something like that. It results in a Washington 27 to 23 win. Did you see that kept me a half point under the total, Denton? Washington 27-23. They advance to a game. I think it'll be in Philadelphia. I think it'll be in Detroit next week in the divisional round, because I like Philly to win on Sunday afternoon. But I got Washington 27-23, Jaden being high level, high completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no mistakes. Washington wins their first playoff game in 19 years in the same place they won their last playoff game 19 years ago. All right, Denton, what do you got for Jaden? What do you got for a final score?
So I think Jaden's going to have a much better performance than he did the first time against Tampa Bay throwing the football. I think he's going to go over 250 yards. His decision-making has been really good. I think him and Terry get back on the same page. I told you early in this week, the thing I'm most confident about offensively is that Terry's going to have a really strong performance this weekend against Tampa Bay. I think they connect on one of the deep shots, which gets him over that 250-yard mark. I am going to go a little bit more conservative, though, on the rushing numbers, but I think that's mostly because I'm not expecting him to run a ton. I don't think this is going to be like the first game where he tucked it and ran 16 times, or like the Atlanta game where he had to put the cape on. I do think they're going to be a little bit more balanced offensively, and that other guys are going to help out. So I'm going to say he's only going to get around 50 to 60 rushing yards. I think there's going to be one or two big ones in there, you know, a 15-yard or a 12, 13, 14-yard or something like that. But I think he stays around that 50 to 60 mark rather than making it a real massive leaning point. Not focal point, but leaning point of the offense. So I'm going to say 250 yards passing, around 50 to 60 rushing yards, two touchdowns. And I do think Washington wins this one. We're a little similar in this score, but not too similar. I'm going to go 28 to 27. Washington gets the one-point win. Unfortunately, that over for you does hit in my mind, but Washington gets its first playoff win in 19 years.
No, we feel the exact same way about Jaden's numbers, that it won't be, you know, a high rushing night, but it'll be a solid passing night. And again, I think completion percentage, it'll be huge, because when you're completing passes, the clock's rolling. You're keeping it away from their team offensively, and that's what you want. You want kind of a lower possession game, nine drives, you score in five or six of them, and you know, win 27-23, something like that. I think two players, Eckler and De'Ami Brown, will be very productive Sunday night for them. I just have a feeling that Eckler in particular will be. All right. Let's go get them. This is much better than talking about the coaching carousel and free agency and the draft. That's got at least another couple of weeks. And I'm not talking about because they're going to win, but we'll be talking about whatever happens on Sunday night for a while. Chris Russell with his swing at it next, back on Monday.